except Amen. Her husband understood, even when it seemed there was no way to understand. Her husband engaged her, even when she would roll her eyes to the ceiling as he prayed. Talk about disrespect, not to mention irreverence. The bottom line is he won the game. They won the game. And they are together today because he was willing to do whatever it took to stop the crazy cycle. Then she finally got the message and wanted to stop it too. No matter how desperate or hopeless a marriage may seem, if husband and wife both have basic goodwill in their hearts, they can stop the crazy cycle. But like the husband who never gave up, they have to be willing to do whatever it takes. In saying, do whatever it takes, I mean winning within the boundaries of the law of Christ. 1 Corinthians 9:21. Christ's law may mean constant giving and forgiving. As the Bible says in 1 Peter 4:8 and Matthew 5:38, love covers a multitude of sins. But Christ's law may also mean turning someone away from a multitude of sins. James 5:20 and Matthew 18:15. Love must be tough. To know which approach to take in your marriage, I want you to seek godly wise counsel. Of course, doing whatever it takes can take you where you may not want to go. As I counsel couples and conduct seminars, I continually find wives who have been so hurt and even abused that they don't think they can forgive their husbands. And I find husbands who just don't know what to do when she won't forgive. They keep saying to themselves as men that they've blown it again, and they eventually start thinking, could anybody live with this woman? I'm certainly not having much luck. We'll look at these two concerns in chapter 7. Chapter 7. She thinks she can't forgive him. He says, nobody can love that woman. Many a wife is so beaten down by the unloving harshness of her husband that she simply has no hope. She has tried to forgive him again and again, and he only gets worse. Getting in his face, disrespecting him, seems to be the only way she can survive at all. She would like to stop the crazy cycle, but she will forgive him when he asks for her forgiveness and not before. The problem here is that few husbands will ask for forgiveness, particularly if the wife keeps going with her disrespect. The crazy cycle will spin and spin some more. There are many books on forgiveness and quite a few Bible verses too. Jesus taught forgiveness and so did Paul. When Peter asked Jesus if 7 times was enough to forgive someone, Jesus replied, not 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. Matthew 18:22. In other words, without limit. Paul may have had Jesus' words in mind when he wrote, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Ephesians 4:32. I freely admit that it's really not fair to ask wives to forgive their unloving husbands, but this isn't about fairness. It's about touching his spirit, and possibly God will touch him as well. The wife may have been mistreated, but she can influence the situation to take a new course. Can she overlook another unloving remark or thoughtless act? It is easier to forgive when you let go of the belief that your spouse intended evil. The love and respect connection teaches that when the two of you wind up spinning on the crazy cycle, your husband did not intend to be unloving any more than you intended to be disrespectful. You reacted because you felt unloved. Should a husband be unforgiving of your disrespect when your deepest cry was for love? Ideally, the answer is no. But because he is human, your husband may react in ways that may be unloving when he feels you are disrespecting him. Why be unforgiving when all he wanted was to feel that you still respected who he is as a human being apart from his performance? He may have been harsh, uncaring, even uncouth, but he did not intend evil. Some wives may be a bit cynical about what I'm saying. From all your past history, you just know your spouse intended evil, at least a little. But do you really think your husband's mission is to treat you unlovingly out of an evil heart? Your husband doesn't get up in the morning thinking, what can I do to upset her today? Nor do you awaken with the goal of offending him. Yet we do step on each other's air hoses. Yes, your husband's unloving actions or reactions hurt you. But as Paul put it, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Colossians 3:13. Surely forgive includes your husband. So why not move first and be the mature one? When you forgive him for being unloving, you give up your right to hold a grudge and be disrespectful in return. By forgiving, you gain strength and freedom. And amazingly, in many instances, you halt the crazy cycle. A wife writes, I didn't respect my husband because I came from a family where my mom had divorced twice and my stepdad who raised me was an alcoholic and neither my mother nor my sisters had respect for him. I also didn't understand that respect was something that my husband needed. He's a very loving person, but he has done some things that have really hurt our marriage and me, and it has been difficult for me to forgive him. I realize now that God focuses on the heart and not on the behavior. Because of this, I found it easier to forgive my husband. This has set me free. Jesus said in John 8, verse 7, He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Do you know why Sarah can readily forgive me for being unloving? My mature wife has accepted by faith that in the eyes of God, her disrespect is equal to my lack of love. That is what Ephesians 5:33 loudly implies. So she has laid down her stones. She does not feel she has a right to judge me too severely. In turn, her example has profoundly affected me. When she is disrespectful toward me, I don't hold it against her. Who am I to judge her and overlook my unloving tendencies of anger and lack of servanthood? Forgiveness comes when we see our own unrighteousness. How can we refuse to forgive an offense when we too have offended? Jesus' words of warning ring loud. He says this in Matthew 7, verses 1 through 3. Do not judge, so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? As a wife, if you pass judgment on your husband for being unloving, ask yourself, am I guilty of being disrespectful? One wife heard our love and respect message and wrote me, My problem is this. I was really getting fired up about changing the way I treat and motivate my husband. But my husband stopped me dead in my tracks with news that he is having an affair and has been thinking of leaving me. My world is shattered. He is unsure if he loves me, but he's unready to decide which direction he is going. I want to embrace God's principles, but am unsure if it applies to me in this situation. I'm looking for some advice on whether a cheating man is in the position to respond and whether I should be trying such a hard thing at this moment. I replied to the woman's heart-wrenching situation by pointing out that using love and respect principles can and does work with a husband who has done what hers did. He is in sin, I said. He is offending both God and you. There is no question about this. But wives are winning their husbands in exactly this situation. We just met with a couple 2 weeks ago, I wrote. She won him back. It can happen, and it does happen, and it is worth it. Several months later, I emailed the woman to see how she was doing. She replied, Emerson, I listened hard to what you said to me. I listened even harder to what the Lord was saying, too. I spent months on my knees just getting through it all. It is hard to explain the way my heart changed through this experience. I remain profoundly amazed that I have the ability to forgive something so unforgivable. I'm astounded at the poise and control God provided me with when I was in the midst of my struggles. I would pray daily and really search my mind for one thing to respect about my husband. I despised him. I didn't think I would be able to find one thing. You gave me ideas and places to start, so that is where I started. Then as we progressed in counseling, he did his part to reassure me she was gone, and there was no further contact between them. It is funny. I feel as though I should have done more work to pick up the pieces of my heart and forgive him. God just did it all. And we never feel worthy of these kinds of miracles. My husband is in love with me again and has truly had a repentant heart. His affair is long over and she is history completely, period. We are still in counseling because there is so much we still need to do to repair a marriage that was never the best it could be. I would say our marriage is better now than it has ever been. And yet we still have a long way to go. God has helped me with my pain and he has healed me so well. It worked. I did win him back. When you told me I could, I really wondered if that was possible. But God has changed my husband more than I ever expected, and I hope it continues. I have changed too. I am finally seeing in me the wife that I always wanted to be. There are two things in this lady's letter that are well worth noting. One is that she is amazed at how God put forgiveness in her heart as she committed to obeying his word. She did not have to work at forgiving her husband. She only had to work on obeying the Lord. And then the forgiveness flowed into her heart. Second, she sees that she is now becoming the wife she always wanted to be. She realizes that while He had logs in his eye. She had her own to contend with. Forgiving is the direct opposite of judging. Nothing is easier than judging. Nothing is harder than forgiving. And nothing can reap more blessings. While wives may have trouble with forgiving unloving husbands, these same husbands may be tempted to think there is no way they can ever win, that nobody could love the woman they are married to. But that kind of thinking is a dead end. There is a way to win and to love that woman, after all, as we will see below. If you fail to love her, rebound. Many basketball coaches put almost as much emphasis on rebounding as they do on shooting. Great players always chase down rebounds at both ends of the court. They pick up on the angle of the missed shot and position themselves to be in the right spot when the ball comes down off the rim. In many cases, after recovering the ball, they score a basket and get fouled in the process. Any coach will tell you good rebounding will keep his team in the game. The analogy is obvious. The husband who is starting to get it about the love and respect connection, and who seeks his wife's forgiveness, can't let a few misses stop him. Perhaps you failed again to decode her deeper cry. You failed again by reacting unlovingly to her contempt. In fact, you got tired of all the verbal blows, and you stonewalled, withdrawing from her constant criticism. Never give up. When you miss, rebound. Go after it again. You can and will win your wife's heart, even on the heels of a miserable first performance or a second or a third. Whenever you forget and react in an unloving way, rebound. Tell her, "I'm sorry. Will you forgive me for reacting so unlovingly?" Right now, husbands reading this may be thinking, "Emerson, that's okay for you, but you've never had to face what I face." Well, let's look at my record. I'm supposed to be the love and respect poster child. I've preached the love and respect message for more than 5 years, but I still have moments when I get angry and withdraw. I'm still only a man, and the flesh can be weak no matter how much experience you think you have. And through the years, I've had more pressure than some men. There were times when, despite all of what I had been telling seminar goers about the love and respect connection, I would become angry when Sarah would criticize me, and I would try to stonewall her. She would simply follow me through the house saying, "What would you say to a husband who was acting like you? How would you counsel him to treat me?" Good grief. Stop the planet. I want to get off. How embarrassing. How awkward. How unfair. At some point, however, I have to calm myself down. I have to grow up, be mature. Like the fawns in Happy Days, I try to mouth, I was wrong. I don't like to be disrespected and then have to apologize for being unloving any more than the next guy. It's not normal. But I know from personal experience that it is possible to fail, even as a so-called expert, and still recover. I know what it is like to rebound when you seem unable to make any shots on a certain day. As I prayed and sought answers to my own weaknesses, I found help in the scriptures. Malachi tells us, quote, "Take heed then to your spirit, and let no one deal treacherously against the wife of your youth." Chapter 2, verse 15. I also found real solace in Proverbs 24:16. "For a righteous man falls 7 times and rises again." None of us is perfect. We all blow it. As a man takes baby steps toward a better marriage, the love and respect connection, he may find himself falling 7 times, possibly more. But he should take a lesson from one of his own children when that child was learning to walk. No toddler falls the first time and stays on his bottom. He gets up and falls again, gets up, falls again, gets up, falls again, gets up, and keeps walking. Eventually he figures it out. Husbands, some of you have stuff from the past. Bad habits exist. The sins of your fathers are visited upon you. Exodus 20, verse 5. You will slip and not think about decoding her message at the moment because she feels so offensive. You might even say, "Drop it," and then you will try to move on without thinking more about it. While God is gracious and kind, he knows that old habits don't die unless they are dealt with. It is in moments like these that he will speak to you saying, "Go back. You honestly forgot to decode her message. You responded like a male. You thought you were doing the honorable thing by refusing to engage her, but that isn't going to work now. It won't stop the craziness. I want you to hear her deeper cry and move toward her. Allow her to vent. Embrace her negativity and anger. If you can do that, if you can take the hit, keep coming, then you'll be able to say something like this, "Honey, I'm sorry for coming across so unlovingly. When you come at me like that, it makes me angry because I feel you don't respect me. But I want to change. Please help me." When his wife comes at him with disrespect flashing in her eyes and venom shooting from her tongue, every husband has two choices. One, defend his pride by firing back venom of his own or stonewalling her. Or two, try to hear his wife's cry and respond with unconditional love. I've made the decision that with God's help, I will always choose option two. Try to hear Sarah's cry and respond with unconditional love. But even though our marriage is much better and stronger than ever, I still miss the loving mark now and then. And when I miss, even ever so slightly, I try to rebound. After calming down, usually in a few minutes, I say, "I'm sorry. I know I've been unloving." And of course, from the other side of our marriage, that wonderful woman, who I always knew would be my friend, responds and says she's sorry for her disrespect. Best of all, she no longer follows me around the house wanting to know how I would give advice to a husband who is acting like an unloving schmuck. Marriage, a two-become-one proposition. It is my hope that husbands and wives will use the insights in this chapter, as well as in chapters 3 through 6, to find the courage and motivation to try the love and respect connection to stop the crazy cycle. It is true that unconditional respect by wives for husbands is the part of our message that is seen as new and even revolutionary. Respect for husbands has been there all the time, nestled in a short phrase in Ephesians 5:33, and for some reason we in the church have missed it over all these years. But now the secret seems to be out. As the wife sees her husband's goodwill and forgives the past, many of her disrespectful feelings can leave her. Even if some remain, her respectful actions can empower her to influence the marriage in the direction she longs for it to go. In these several chapters, I've tried to balance the scales and make husbands aware of the tremendous power that can be theirs if they decide to reach out with understanding, engage their wives even when being dealt verbal death blows, and rebound when they fail to unconditionally love as God directs. Yes, a marriage can survive, and even improve somewhat, with one spouse carrying most of the load. But God's design is that marriage be a two-become-one proposition. As husbands and wives learn to respect each other and love each other, miracles do indeed happen. Bad marriages become good. Boring marriages become exciting. And good marriages become better and better. One husband whose great marriage became much better wrote to tell us of being married for 23 years, having wonderful children, and being able to start a television and radio ministry to families. But something was missing. He shared with his wife that God had been moving in his heart to take a different approach to working with couples in crisis. He could see that the very real differences between men and women were not being recognized in a society that was out of balance in the ways it was training men and women to think from an early age. He and his wife discussed his greatest need for respect and her greatest need for love. Then a few days later, they heard about the Love and Respect Connection on the radio. They ordered some of our materials, and after going through them, they realized that God was doing some big things in their lives by divine appointment. His letter went on to say, "Even though on the outside to many it looked as if we had a great marriage, and we do, there were several areas in our marriage that I had secretly given up on. On a scale of 1 to 10, we were living with a 5 to 6 marriage most of the time. We both wanted a marriage that was characterized by being in the 9 and 10 category, at least some of the time. After reading your book, my wife and I left for several days, and the best I can describe it, God brought the greatest breakthrough I have seen in my relationship with my wife. Somehow, God softened our hearts as we began really to look at this love and respect issue with more priority. This should come as no surprise, but it is so much easier to teach what is right and true than to completely live it for yourself. Now my wife and I continue to grow even closer, and I think our effectiveness in administering to couples in need is being greatly impacted." We also get many letters from couples whose bad marriages have become good. For example, we heard from a wife who admitted that both she and her husband were on marriage number 3. In addition, they were in recovery for alcoholism, and she had come from a broken home and had very little respect for men. After 2 years of this third marriage, she wasn't sure it would last either. She had been reluctant to marry again after two failures, but after meeting with a counselor, she wanted to do it God's way this time. Then her husband was injured and needed surgeries that kept him out of work for 2 years. The financial strain was terrific in trying to care for a blended family of 5 teenage boys. Her husband seemed to have no self-respect and wasn't acting respectful or loving toward her. She felt if she loved him more, it would work, but it didn't. They tried studying videos and workbooks on marriage, as well as counseling, but they couldn't turn around their crazy cycle. Feeling trapped and helpless, this wife cried herself to sleep at least 2 times a week and could not imagine going on like this much longer when she heard about our book, Motivating Your Man God's Way. Her letter continues, "After reading your book, I apologized to my husband and told him I'd not been respectful of him and that I truly wanted to, and then I started doing just that. And ta-da, it works. My gratefulness cannot be expressed. I finally get it. Thank you for revealing to me how to respect my husband as God has commanded. I've been using respectful phrases, and my attitude, and most importantly, his attitude and behavior, has done a 180-degree turn. I have peace and hope this will be our last marriage and that it will honor our God." I especially like a letter we received from a daughter who reported on the differences that the love and respect message made in her parents' marriage. Her mother told her that she just asks the Lord to change the look on her face and the feelings she has. That always works, if she keeps her mouth shut. The daughter's letter continued, "Anyway, my mother is doing that, and my dad is confessing things from the past. She has seen a big change in the way he is thinking and acting, and it has given her hope for the future. She also says she is using the respect words and is seeing immediate results in the way my dad responds back. This is awesome because they have never been able to talk serious without anger, or at least volume. Thank you for bringing hope to my mother and ultimately to me and my sisters." From the crazy cycle to the energizing cycle. Letters like these just keep coming. The love and respect connection is stopping the crazy cycle in marriages all over the country. If husband and wife can commit to meeting each other's primary needs, unconditional love for her and unconditional respect for him, they will take a giant step toward keeping the crazy cycle under control. Note that I did not say getting rid of the crazy cycle once and for all. As much as I wish I could give you a surefire way to do this, I can't. All of us get on the crazy cycle from time to time because nobody's perfect. Sarah and I still work at controlling the crazy cycle because we can react negatively to each other in small and seemingly insignificant ways. She sees pink, and I see blue. She hears pink, and I hear blue. So conflict is bound to happen. Keeping that conflict contained and not letting it escalate is what controlling the crazy cycle is all about. Sarah and I have learned to recognize the signs of when the crazy cycle is even threatening to spin, and we know how to slow it down and stop it when it does start making a revolution or two. Best of all, we have a secret weapon that usually keeps the crazy cycle in its cage. It's called the energizing cycle, which is driven by a simple mechanism. His love motivates her respect. Her respect motivates his love. In part two of this book, I will give you literally dozens of ideas, principles, and strategies that will put your marriage in the energizing cycle. And if you commit to working at it, you will stay there. Part two, the energizing cycle. Because the crazy cycle is always ready to spin, you and your spouse need to get on the energizing cycle and stay there. The following chapters contain important scriptures that apply to the love and respect connection in marriage. I also share principles, techniques, and common sense to help husbands and wives learn how to practice the love and respect message on a daily basis. As we learned in part one, husbands need particular help with love, and wives need particular help with respect. To simplify matters, I use two acronyms containing 6 areas of key importance for each spouse. COUPLE, the acronym COUPLE, is advice for husbands, with separate chapters on C for closeness, O for openness, U for understanding, P for peacemaking, L for loyalty, and E for esteem. CHAIRS, CHAIRS, covers advice for wives and includes separate chapters on C for conquest, H for hierarchy, A for authority, I for insight, R for relationship, and S for sexuality. It takes constant work to stay on the energizing cycle. These brief chapters are full of biblical help and practical tips that will help you build a better and stronger marriage. Chapter 8, COUPLE, How to Spell Love to Your Wife. Note to the wives, this chapter and the 6 chapters to follow are for husbands only, but you wives are invited to read along. Gentlemen, we have spent quite a bit of time learning how to stop the crazy cycle. In the following chapters, we want to focus on getting on the energizing cycle and staying there. The energizing cycle is proactive, it is positive, and it is preventative. Stay on the energizing cycle, and the crazy cycle will not spin. Because you and your wife are human, however, the crazy cycle may start to make a revolution or two. It does for Sarah and me, but only when we forget to use the tools and techniques in the energizing cycle. What I will cover in chapters 9 through 14 may not seem to be natural for you, and that's okay. As we have already seen, love is not a husband's mother tongue. And because God commands you to do this, it illustrates the fact that it's not within your nature to do it naturally. Otherwise, the command would be moot, right? So it's okay for you not to feel natural or comfortable with this. But as you live out the several simple truths for husbands set forth in Scripture, which are presented in the acronym COUPLE, it will energize your wife. She will respond with respect, and that is your mother tongue. Before we get into the details in C for closeness, O for openness, U for understanding, P for peacemaking, L for loyalty, and E for esteem, we need to look at the word COUPLE itself. It means two people connected together. And that is the key to how women view relationships. Women want to couple. They want to connect. Wives want connectivity. Think of a photograph of the two of you, which symbolizes your relationship. As troubles, big or small, hit your marriage, imagine that photo being ripped straight down the middle, or at least torn a bit. Your wife sees it as her mission to tape the relationship back together. She wants to connect with you, and she approaches you with that intention in mind. Here's where couples often run into trouble as they try to work out their problems, even small ones. Women confront to connect. The typical response from a man, however, is that he thinks his wife is confronting to control. If another man talked to this man like that, he would sound intentionally provocative. Is that not why some men feel their wives are picking a fight? Even the simplest and mildest confrontation between you and your wife is an excellent illustration of this basic difference between the deepest need of a man and a woman in a relationship. It is a clear picture of how the codes you send one another can be misinterpreted because of your very different needs. In part 1, we looked at the need to learn how to decode. When your good-willed wife appears negative and offensive, she is crying out for COUPLE, to couple with you, to connect with you. At such moments, your feelings may tell you she's just being critical and disrespectful. Take it by faith, however, what she really wants is to connect. She wants your love. This husband wouldn't believe me until one couple who came to me for counseling had the very problem I'm speaking of. She had been confronting him, and he felt suffocated, frustrated with her controlling attitude and her seeming lack of respect for him. I told the husband, "Sir, your wife is confronting you to connect." "No," he answered quickly. "She tries to control me." I turned to the wife and asked, "Are you really confronting him to try to control him?" "Of course not. It's just what you said. I'm trying to connect with him." I turned back to the husband. "You see?" Well, he didn't see. He insisted, "She's a controlling person." In that session and several others, that husband would not let go of his interpretation of his wife's confronting ways. He was convinced he knew what she meant, and he knew why she was doing what she was doing. He had received her code, translated it, and thought he understood the message. She is a controlling person. Obviously, he was wrong. But at this point, he wasn't willing to try to decode his wife more accurately. As it so happened, they later attended one of our Love and Respect conferences and sent me a note afterward. "We are now a Love and Respect couple. We realize that we misinterpret the codes we receive. And when we try to communicate what we feel, it can come across in different ways than we intend." This couple got it, particularly the husband. He figured out that if his wife came across to him as controlling or too negative or too complaining or too disrespectful, he had to realize he could easily misinterpret her code. Her cry was, "Love me." When he withdrew, she would simply try even harder to access his heart. He saw that she tried to pull him closer. He had mistakenly assumed she was trying to put him even more firmly under her thumb. Once he learned to decode her correctly, he started to make progress in getting off the crazy cycle and on the energizing cycle. She was not scolding him as a bad boy. She longed to be his lover, not his mother. Learn to trust your instruments. Vertigo is defined as a sensation of dizziness and the feeling that you are being whirled about in your environment. The term vertigo is sometimes used when training people to fly, especially when they learn to fly on instruments without being able to see where they are going. Unless a pilot learns to pay attention to his instruments, he will feel as if he is being whirled about, quickly get disoriented, and crash. He learns that if his instrument panel tells him he's upside down, even if he feels right side up, he should listen to the instrument panel and turn the plane right side up, no matter how he feels. The instrument panel is not hampered by feelings, nor is it blinded by an impassable bank of clouds or fog enveloping the plane. In short, the instrument panel cannot be fooled, and it does not lie. As we go through all of the secrets in COUPLE, couple, and the various aspects of connectivity, I want you to treat the following 6 short chapters as your instrument panel. Don't always let what you see, hear, and seem to feel determine how you will interpret a situation. Instead, keep in mind that you are the one who wears blue sunglasses and has blue hearing aids. They color and influence what you see and hear, and they form your understanding of the code you may be receiving from your wife. You may think, maybe some men's wives are trying to connect with them, but not mine. She's trying to control me. You have to set all of that aside. You have to trust your instrument panel, which is labeled COUPLE. Do this, and you won't get disoriented and dizzy. Sure signs of the crazy cycle. Instead, you will energize your wife. COUPLE is based on foundational biblical passages related to husbands and marriage. You cannot go wrong trusting and obeying God's revelation. You will learn how to show love in your tone, words, and face, even in the middle of a conflict that would normally send you into some state of stonewalling or irritation, and you will see her melt. Trust me, the energizing cycle is truly powerful when you trust your instrument panel. In the ocean of conflict, men sink unless... As we saw in part 1, a man's tendency is to pull back from conflict. When the ocean of marriage emotions becomes turbulent, a husband can feel as if he is drowning. A wife, on the other hand, stays afloat quite naturally and comfortably. But if a husband will use biblical principles, God's techniques, if you will, I believe that he can learn to swim through the conflict. A man voiced his discontent to me about the way his wife would verbally emasculate him. He was a man's man, blue to the core. His tendency during her flare-ups was to stonewall, which sent her through the roof. I coached him to approach her differently to discover the benevolent power he possessed over the spirit of his wife, a power every woman readily defers to when loved. He reported back to me his shock when he tried what I suggested. As usual, she became disgruntled and vexed with him about something trivial. He stopped her and said gently but firmly, "Look, you can continue to emasculate me, or you can join me on the couch where we can sit down and pray over this." Like air out of a balloon, all the negativity drained from her. She stopped her ranting, turned, headed for the couch, sat down, bowed her head, and put her hand out for him to hold. He was in utter disbelief. He had never seen such a sight. I told him, "Look, women may seem to be out of control, or it may appear they are trying to control you, but their real motive is to connect in love. When she feels true love coming toward her, she immediately and respectfully aligns herself with the spirit of her husband. Her goal is accomplished. That was her purpose all along." This husband saw my point. He admitted that trying my suggestion went against his natural grain. But when he saw the results, he became a believer. He had learned to trust his instrument panel. To love her doesn't mean becoming pink. Note that when I ask you to trust your instrument panel and pursue a course of love with your wife, I'm not calling on you to become a woman. We make a huge mistake in the church, particularly among evangelicals. We tell men to get in tune with their feminine side, yet we don't tell women to get in tune with their masculine side. Men are not to be effeminate. 1 Corinthians 6:9 states that. When I challenge a husband to love, I'm not calling on him to become pink. Instead, I call on him to be a man of honor, to adjust his blue sunglasses and blue hearing aids a bit and put on love. The truth is, it is easier for many a man to die for honor than to move toward a contemptuous wife in a loving way, saying, "I believe I was wrong. Can we talk about this?" To turn to your wife in the middle of a conflict and say, "I'm sorry, will you forgive me?" takes guts. I know because I've been there. It isn't pleasant, but it works powerfully. Over time, it becomes easier, but it is never natural, as I said earlier, and that's okay. Even so, this response gives you the power to drain the negativity out of your wife in conflict after conflict. And the best part of it is that you, the male who tends to see and hear life through blue, will touch your pink wife in a tender and loving way that she desires. Some wives simply melt. Others warm up considerably. At the very least, she will soften, and you can talk through whatever the situation may be. You will gain the right to appeal to her, to understand your need for respect, and to join you on the energizing cycle. As we study COUPLE, my prayer is that you will discover how Scripture describes God's heart and will learn what it means to be a husband. You won't have to become a Bible scholar and study dozens of passages. I'll show you only a small number of verses, but they will all be significant because they spell love to a wife. As one husband told me, "The information is working. I have seen the glow in my wife's eyes when I apply it, and defeat and despair in her eyes when I fail to practice the principles you are trying to teach me through your material and God's word." To keep that glow in your wife's eyes, act on the biblical principles I will describe in the following chapters, and your wife will feel loved. That's connectivity. That's coupling. You will energize your wife God's way and see how His way works in the heart of a good-willed woman. Still a bit dubious? Let's take a closer look at COUPLE and see. We'll start with closeness. Chapter 9, Closeness. She wants you to be close. It is no coincidence that early on in the Bible, in describing the first marriage in human history, there is a living definition of the meaning of closeness. Genesis 2:24. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." When Scripture speaks of cleaving, the idea in the Hebrew is to cling, hold, or keep close. Two are joined together face to face, becoming one flesh. Did you know that in all of God's creation, only human beings are sexually intimate face to face? Cleaving, however, is more than sexual. Cleaving also means spiritual and emotional closeness. This is a salient passage for husbands, full of insight. Your wife will feel loved when you move toward her and let her know you want to be close with a look, a touch, or a smile. In the book of Deuteronomy, we find still more about what it means to be close. Deuteronomy 24, verse 5 says, "When a man takes a new wife, he shall not go out with the army, nor be charged with any duty. He shall be free at home 1 year, and shall give happiness to his wife whom he has taken." This is a fascinating passage because it shows how well the Israelites understood marriage. Why the whole first year? They knew that the first year of marriage is fundamental. It is important to set the tone for the closeness of the relationship before the wear and tear of life takes the husband away for periods of time before they face other problems. The first few seconds set the tone. Spending all of the first year together and never being apart is not feasible for the modern marriage, but you can still set a positive tone each day. When you come home, after you've been apart, the first few moments of reconnecting will set the tone for the rest of the evening. In today's culture, economics often dictate that husband and wife both work. Your wife may arrive home after you do, but the basic dynamics of closeness still apply. Remember that she wants to connect, She wants face-to-face involvement. You both have had a long and possibly tough day. If all you want to do is flop on the couch and watch TV while she fixes you a nice dinner, you are missing it big time. This kind of uninvolved behavior will not make your wife feel loved. She will feel loved if you come into the kitchen and help her prepare dinner, even if nothing more than setting the table. Or you could possibly even start dinner before she gets home. What a concept. Yet another idea is to sit and talk with her as she gets the meal together. Tell her about your day, and be sure to ask her about hers. She may be busy with children or other duties, but she will be listening, I assure you. What she tends to look for is your desire to dwell with her for a short period to discover where her heart is. If she senses you authentically want to connect, this can do more for her than a one-hour discussion. For your wife, face-to-face time is heart-to-heart time. This is especially true if she is deeply burdened, and the wise husband tries to pick up clues that suggest this might be the case. Some husbands might think that spending all of this time in the kitchen is unmanly, but as we've seen in Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, the Hebrew generals did not mock a warrior for being home. In fact, as a man of honor, he was ordered to spend his first year of marriage with his wife. And as I say, then he was to go out to war and die. Undoubtedly, a young bridegroom wanted to be out with his comrades fighting the enemy. But as a man of honor, he learned to do two things. In the field, he did what was respectable, and in the family, he did what was loving. He wore his two hats interchangeably and wore them well. What my four-year-old taught me about connecting. If a husband will adjust his blue sunglasses and blue hearing aids, he will understand that his wife has a need to feel close and connect face to face in a way that he does not. Think about coffee shops across the land where cappuccinos and lattes are sipped and savored. Many of these shops have little round tables with two chairs facing each other. Usually two people are seated at these small tables, leaning forward, face to face, hand under chin, and they are talking. Are these talking people men or women? As a rule, they are women. Women like round tables that place no one at the head in a position of leadership. They like to see eye to eye and connect on a personal level. I learned about this female need for face-to-face connection from my daughter, Joy, when she was just 4 years old. One evening, I put her to bed, and I lay there with her for a few moments to help her get to sleep. The room is pitch black, and Joy was talking as usual, little Miss Motormouth. Neither of us could see the other in the darkness. As she was talking, suddenly she said, "Daddy, look at me." Then, her little hands reached over and grabbed my face, forcing me to look toward her. Already at this age, even in the dark, she sensed that Daddy wasn't looking. And if he wasn't looking, then he wasn't listening. I cannot recall my sons, Jonathan and David, ever grabbing my face like that and demanding, "Look at me." This connectivity is what women look for in any relationship, and especially marriage. When she married you, she thought you would be like her best girlfriend. You would figuratively sit with her at the little round table to talk eye to eye. But that probably didn't happen. With many husbands, it seldom or never happens. Involvement or independence. Before you take a guilt trip, realize that no man can meet all the emotional needs of a woman. At the same time, perhaps you can start to try to meet some of your wife's needs by forgoing your tall, cool one, your newspaper, your sports center. You can understand what she is doing when she moves toward you, which she normally will do. That's why she follows you around in the evening, or did when you were first married. It's her way of showing you she loves you. One way to picture your marriage is with a line that has the word involvement at one end and the word independence at the other. Envision that in your mind. In the typical marriage relationship, she leans more toward the involvement side, while he leans more toward the independence side. When you get too independent, especially when you stonewall, she does not feel close to you and begins to feel you don't love her. When she doesn't give you the space you need, you begin to feel that she's trying to get too involved and doesn't respect you. The line illustrates the tension that exists between your basic needs for involvement and independence. Tension is not bad, it is simply there. In fact, it is a necessary part of your relationship. A degree of tension in a marriage is actually one of the things that makes the relationship good. Only chickens get henpecked. The tension between involvement and independence is another illustration of the difference between pink and blue. As a man, you will probably not be able to be as involved with your wife as much as she may like. I'm not asking men to become women who sit at tiny tables at cappuccino shops and sip coffee as they share life face to face. You are a man, and your wife loves you for being a man, not a woman. She doesn't expect you to become feminine, just like her girlfriend. But when you move toward her, when you show her you want to connect in even small ways, watch what happens. This will motivate her. It will energize her. And it will keep your marriage off the crazy cycle and on the energizing cycle. Of course, you can always grab tightly onto your brass ring called independence. You can insist on having your space. After all, you work hard all week, and you deserve a little golf, or fishing, or watching a good game on TV. You aren't going to be the henpecked husband who can never get out with the guys because his wife always has chores or errands she wants him to do. And besides, you're not going to move toward her until you get a little bit more respect, a little more awareness of your need for space and independence. This, of course, does not work. Never has worked, never will work. You cannot motivate your spouse to give you what you need by withholding what she really needs. If you do, you're only jumping on the crazy cycle. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love, and that baby spins. One of the biggest stumbling blocks to drawing closer to your wife may be the classic male fear of being so controlled you feel you can't make a move without checking with her. If you've committed to being a love and respect husband, fears that you will be henpecked are childish. Genesis 2:24 talks about cleaving and becoming one flesh with your wife. There isn't a word about being henpecked. Obviously, both of you need some space now and then, and working that out is part of becoming mature adults who communicate and who try to decode each other's needs. Crazy cycle versus energizing cycle. Battle to the death. So choose to be an adult. I did, and it worked. I finally understood that to stop the crazy cycle and stay on the energizing cycle, I had to give Sarah what she really needs. When I did that, a funny thing happened. She became motivated to give me what I really needed. To paraphrase the golden rule, just as you want your spouse to treat you, treat your spouse in the same way. Luke 6:31. There is no neutrality here. In a way, this is a war. A battle to the death between the crazy cycle and the energizing cycle. You can either motivate your wife rightly, or you can demoralize her. It's your choice. There is an old story about an older couple having dinner in a restaurant. The wife sees another couple about their age sitting in a booth nearby. She sees the husband over there sitting close to his wife, with his arm around her. He's whispering things in her ear, and she is smiling and blushing. He's gently rubbing her shoulder and touching her hair. The woman turns to her husband and says, "Look at that couple over there. Look at how close that man is to his wife, how he's talking to her. Look at how sweet he is. Why don't you ever do that?" Her husband looks up from his Caesar salad and glances over at the next booth. Then he turns to his wife and says, "Honey, I don't even know that woman." An old joke, perhaps even a corny one, but it makes a point about pink and blue. Pink wants closeness. Blue is busy with his Caesar salad, anticipating the prime rib to come. Until both adjust their sunglasses and hearing aids, there will be continued tension that will not make a great marriage. A great marriage happens when the tension is dealt with creatively, or when tension is avoided completely by doing a few positive, loving things. This can pay off big time, especially for wives. One woman reported, "My husband has been talking more to me, been more affectionate, and I feel like we have been closer in the past few weeks than we have in years." Being close costs nothing but your time and love. Many of the following tips and techniques are the courtesy of my wife, Sarah, who speaks on the energizing cycle during one session of every conference we do together. As she compiled her list of ideas to help husbands, Sarah put down things that appeal to her, and she also asked a large number of other women what would make them feel closer to their man. They came up with simple but effective ideas. For example, do you realize the power in just holding her hand? Just the other day, I was walking with Sarah, and she said, a woman feels close to her husband and therefore feels loved when he holds her hand. Of course, I immediately took her hand. I'm a quick study. Or consider the power of a hug. A few years ago, Sarah's mother and mine died very suddenly within an 11-month period. She was close to both of these women, and I would often find her standing at the kitchen sink sobbing. All I would do is go up to her and hug her. I said nothing, but I held Sarah until she quit crying. She told me later, I felt so close to you when you did that. Or consider being affectionate without wanting sex. That may sound a little bit like an oxymoron, but it's true. It's been said that sexual intimacy often begins at breakfast or at some other time during the day. Hug her, hold her hand, tell her you love her, tell her how pretty she is. Be affectionate, but not sexually aggressive. Touching her and kissing her, only when you want sex, is usually a turnoff to your wife. She builds up to sex much slower than you do, so through the day, keep your advances in the affectionate zone only. When you set the right tone with little encounters during the day or evening, it leads much more naturally and easily to sexual intimacy later. Remember, be affectionate and attentive every day, not just on the days you want sex. Affection should be an end, not a means. Hear what this wife is saying. He watches SportsCenter, but I slow down at 10. I want to quiet down and cuddle like we did when first married. However, without the kids, we are two strangers who are not on the same path. This is causing a problem with me being sexually intimate. That is the only time we are close. I need something apart from that. I've just touched on a few examples. See the list below, as well as lists at the end of other chapters in COUPLE. Note that all these suggestions are simple and cost nothing but your time and willingness to be close. Here's the list, gentlemen. Your wife feels close to you when you hold her hand. You hug her. You are affectionate without sexual intentions. You are with her alone so you can focus on each other and laugh together. You go for a walk or jog, anything that results in togetherness. You seek her out, set up a date night, eat by candlelight. You go out of your way to do something for her, like run an errand. You make it a priority to spend time with her. You are aware of her as a person with a mind and opinions. Let her know you enjoy discussing things with her and getting her insight. You suggest the unexpected. Get takeout and eat on the beach, take a walk to see the full moon. Park on the bluff and watch the sunset. You pillow talk after making love. Lie close with your arm around her and share feelings and intimate ideas and never turn on SportsCenter or Nightline. Chapter 10. Openness. She wants you to open up to her. While doing marriage counseling, I have noticed a distinctive trend among the couples who come in to see me. As they enter my office and sit down, the husband will position himself so that he can see me. He will occasionally look up or down or to the opposite side, but he seldom looks directly at his wife, except with quick glances. The wife will position herself so she can see her husband and me. She will watch us both because she is trying to figure out what is going on inside of her husband, what he is thinking. Remember, as a woman, she is expressive, responsive. She wants to talk about things. She wants to have her problems out in the open for discussion in order to solve them. Her husband, however, plays it close to the vest. He is the opposite of expressive responsive, what psychologists consider compartmentalized. His wife senses something is going on inside, but he won't talk about it. Nothing is wrong, he says. Yet her intuition tells her he is definitely upset. So the wife is confused, and she says, I sometimes don't know which to believe. But she never quits. She keeps coming at the problem, trying to figure it out. She longs for his love, which is experienced in her world by connecting openly with his heart. Smash one of her lights, and all of them go out. To fully understand the dynamics that are going on when a couple sits in my office for counseling, it's helpful to define the terms expressive, responsive, and compartmentalized with a simple illustration. We have already seen that men and women are very different. Pink and blue see and hear things differently at the level of marital intimacy. Think of this difference as two types of electrical circuits. On one circuit, there are 3,000 lights, and the circuit is so designed that if one light gets smashed, the whole string goes out. On the other circuit, there are 3,000 lights, and it is designed so that if you smash 2,000 of these lights, the other 1,000 will still work. At the level of intimacy, the wife is like the first circuit. If a serious conflict arises, this affects her whole being. All of her lights go out, and she shuts down totally. This is because she is an integrated personality. Her mind, body, and soul are connected, and her entire system reacts to feelings of hurt. Let her husband make one small unkind remark that feels unloving to her, and she is totally upset with him until things are repaired. As one wife told me, if I'm battling with him in one area, I'm at war with him in all areas. Sometimes a woman can feel at war with her husband because he leaves her feeling lonely. Following is the kind of letter I receive from many wives. So many nights he would come home, watch TV till late, come to bed wanting sex, and I would feel used and unloved. Those feelings of loneliness, I guess, came back to me last night, and I didn't like the way I was feeling. I felt like the TV was more important than me. I realize it isn't true, but that's how I feel. He gets very upset with me when he reads my body language. He will hardly talk to me for days. Let every husband heed what this woman is saying. When she believes there is a problem, when she feels hurt, lonely, or neglected, she definitely has no interest in responding to you sexually. When her spirit is crushed, her body is unavailable. The wife's crushed spirit is not hard to see. Her face tells it all. While women are expressive, men are more poker-faced. The wife may complain that her husband seems to be able to operate as if there is no problem between them, when she clearly is still upset and feeling crushed. He goes to work, and when he returns home, he cannot believe she is fully charged to talk about an earlier tension. Usually, he has to be reminded of what exactly happened because he has forgotten. For her, the whole day has been interwoven with the spat they had at breakfast. She has replayed and rehearsed the episode a dozen times. But he says, oh well, let's just forget it, okay? Let's move on. She cannot imagine how he could make such a remark. Why is he not upset the way she is upset? Well, the answer is easy. Remember the two electrical circuits? Her husband is the one where you can smash 2,000 of his lights and the other 1,000 still work. That is what it means by compartmentalizing his problems. A man has much more ability to control his reactions. His blood pressure may be going through the roof, but he can keep it under wraps. He may be deeply pained, but he shoves it into a compartment in his mind, saying to himself, what's the point in trying to talk about this if that's the way she feels? Wives see husbands as mysterious islands. What I have just covered is a powerful piece of information for all husbands. Understanding that she is integrated, that she is expressive responsive, gives you a huge insight into knowing how to respond when she probes to get you to open up. When a couple sits in my office, the wife is trying to figure him out. She cannot understand why her husband is not as expressive as he was during courtship. During those first months of dating, both of them had been totally open, sharing inner dreams, yearnings, fears, and failures. They spoke heart to heart, and their openness was something they could literally feel, much like the lovers described in Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verse 2, the one I love was at the door, knocking and saying, my darling, my very own, my flawless dove, open the door for me. The imagery